Welcome, everyone, to Breaking Big Blue. I'm your host, Jordan Ron, on ESPN, ESPN.com, Giants reporter. And I'm here with a special guest, Dan Duggan, or as my daughter likes to say, Dan Dugan. Why is Dan Dugan texting you so often? Why is Pat Leonard texting you so often? And why does the group chat that you guys have a curse word in it? These are the important things that she wants to know, Dan. So we're going to go through that, and we're going to go through everything that unfolded at minicamp. We're really doing this right almost immediately after the third day of minicamp concluded. Dan actually jetted home real quick. I'm still sitting in my car with a Starbucks. You are, I assume, are sitting on your couch already, Dan? Feet up?
Yeah.
Ready to take a nap?
Yeah, exactly. My 3-month-old son's in the other room, so I'm just trying to hope he doesn't make too much noise here in the background. But yeah, I'm home, and school's all for summer, which is nice.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. Really, I mean, we're done covering. There's no open access the rest of the spring. The Giants have some stuff on Monday and Tuesday. Sounds like it's more like going to be show up to make sure you collect your off-season workout bonus, really, you know, exit interview type of thing before you head off to the spring now.
Yeah, no, this is a big day for, you know, guys, you know, 53 to 90, it sounds like, next week. I would assume, especially the veterans, obviously, who weren't there for the first couple of OTAs. I can't imagine sticking around. And I'm sure even some of the other guys who maybe came those first 2 weeks will probably say, all right, see you in late July, Joe, and the rest of the gang.
Let's go and get into it and get into some of our impressions, right? I mean, it's hard. They're really just practicing. To be fair, there's no real fully live drills. Like, the defense isn't even allowed to knock down passes. So it's kind of, there's obviously no pressure. There's no offensive line or defensive line play, real physicality. So it's hard to make judgments on that. But is there anything you saw from this week, or really the whole spring, that makes you feel better or worse about Daniel Jones as the Giants quarterback and his prospects of potentially making that jump?
Not really. I mean, I'll say this, like, he always looks good in shorts. I mean, from day one of his rookie minicamp, I mean, he looks the part. It was funny, Darius Slayton was talking today about his arms are getting all cut up. I mean, he looks like a really impressive athlete. You know, he throws a nice ball. All that stuff is fine. It's the question that's really existed now. We're going into year three of it when, you know, in week one, when Von Miller and Bradley Chubb are coming off the edge, is he going to, you know, make the right decision or hold on to the ball? All that type of stuff. And we've seen times where he has, and we've seen times where he hasn't. But I don't think anything you're seeing in May and June is going to make me think drastically different. You know, he's not a guy who like had to lose weight or put on weight. I mean, he just looks good. You know, he's doing all the right things in the offseason. That's one thing. I was talking to our esteemed colleague, Bob Glauber, today, who, I don't know, he got an award for his lifetime achievement this week. But as we're talking, Daniel Jones is running extra sprints from sideline to sideline while, you know, the rest of the team is going through drills. Anything with him, if he fails, it will not be for anything intangible. I mean, he checks all those boxes and then some. He works hard. He's diligent. He's, you know, he's first in, last out, all those cliches. So he looks good in June minicamp. I'd be shocked if he didn't. You know, it's really, like I said, it's when the bullets are flying. We're a few months away from that to see if he's really made the strides that, you know, the Giants certainly are banking on him making.
Yeah, Daniel Jones did not fall when he was doing those sprints. Bum, bum, bum. Horrible joke right there. Horrible joke. I know. So anyone stand out to you? I mean, I have mine in my head of who stood out to me the most this week. And I'll start first, but I'll give you a few seconds to think.
My appreciate that.
This week, I'll leave Evan Engram to you because he's Michael Jordan in shorts and shoulder pads. I mean, we've seen that now for years. But Freddie Kitchens to me, I mean, you got that. He comes out Tuesday. Okay, let me set the scene. Freddie Kitchens comes out Tuesday. He's got like a white t-shirt on. Usually coaches wear, Joe Judge was actually wearing a sweatshirt, I believe, and boy, was it humid and hot. Or some kind of hoodie, you know, like some kind of windbreaker or something, long sleeve. So Freddie comes out, and you should probably know what Freddie Kitchens looks like. You know, he just looks like, you know, he spent time in Alabama, right? He was an Alabama coach. He's a Southerner, a little Southern boy. He's got the twang to him. He's got the shirt, white t-shirt rolled up, sun's out, guns out, Freddie Kitchens, hat backwards. And you're like, holy cow, is that even a coach? So to me, Freddie Kitchens stood out. Just killed it on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I mean, I know you were taken aback by it as well. It was definitely something that caught your attention. Freddie Kitchens just looking like a stud out there.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he came straight from a barbecue or something and just rolled out there. but no, I appreciate you going first to buy me some time to actually try and think of someone from a football perspective. Because yeah,
I obviously took the easy way out, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because, you know, it's not really an evaluation period. I think Joe Judge said as much because, you know, it's not live, fully live. You know, the Giants will put out a clip of, you know, some deep pass and everyone oohs and ahs. But then, like, you realize the defensive back, like you said, can't even contest the catch. So it's a little hard to get too excited. I'll say something that stood out to me, not necessarily a player. It's the Daniel Jones and Kenny Golladay. It seemed like anytime they weren't directly involved in a drill, they were always together. And again, that's, you know, it's one of these little sports writer things that we all love. And, you know, we'll be writing waxing poetically about it if they, you right. know, do blossom into Eli and Plaxico that remember way back when. But really, I mean, it's notable that, you know, there's a lot of different stations during practice and a lot of special teams, especially where obviously the quarterbacks aren't involved. And rather than go stand on the sidelines, those two guys are always together, just getting extra passes and nothing that's going to really, you know, show up in week one. But it's just encouraging that they seem to always, whether it's arranged by the coaching staff or they do it on their own, they're just always together. They're always throwing passes. There's, you know, a couple, the last 2 days they were doing stuff in the end zone where yesterday, I think, you know, again, a clip went viral from the Giants of Golladay making a one-handed catch, but they were really working on back shoulder throws. Then today it was the quarterbacks with Golladay and Evan Engram and Kyle Rudolph even was out there catching some passes, just stationary, but just like constantly being together. I mean, that's what you want to see. You know, Kenny Golladay doesn't have to worry about special teams. He's not going to be running down on kickoff. And he's not even going to be returning, anything like that. So he's got nothing to do in those drills.
I mean, he would start a drill, run a route, and then kind of just stand around and then not run another route again. But like we said, he always made sure he was with Daniel Jones.
Yeah. And I mean, even he had like the line where he's like, that's my boy when he was asked about Daniel Jones. So it seemed like that relationship is off to a good start. So, I mean, again, you're looking at things like that in training camp. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, like, you know, a guy came to my mind as I was thinking, like David Sills. But like, again, they're not really going against pressure from defensive backs. And it's sort of just glorified passing camp, which as the more I think about this, that's probably what the Players Association was hoping to get out of this. Because I can remember going to, we didn't have a Joe Judge, you know, offseason program last year to compare it to. But if you think back to, I was only here for, you know, Shermer and McAdoo, but I'm sure Coughlin's were pretty intense. They were like full-scale practices. And that's what, you know, you talk to J.C. Treader or D. Smith, they wanted to get away from that. So maybe Joe Judge, you know, he says he didn't negotiate, but maybe he just sort of wisely, you know, scaled it back a little bit. It wasn't like 11 on 11. The linemen are basically beating each other up without pads on. It was really like a passing camp and you know, working on timing, communication, all that stuff. So like for me to single out a guy, like again, like David Sills popped in my mind. So I felt like he ran with the ones, maybe more than I would have expected. But I think it'd be a little disingenuous to say like someone really impressed me. But I just think the Jones Golladay thing was interesting and sort of encouraging if you're looking for signs of their chemistry building.
Yeah, that's my boy, Blue. You know, like, they got that thing going, the two of them. You know, spent some, I guess it's not just them, but Daniel Jones has spent some time with his receivers in Arizona, which we don't really know if Golladay was there for that one, but Charlotte as well. And they've also had throwing sessions here. They do it at local high schools a bunch of times. I know they have this offseason in New Jersey. Now, the easy answer, obviously, would be Evan Engram, because, like I said before, dude looks like Michael Jordan in shorts and shoulder pads. I mean, he's just he moves so well. He's in good shape. He you know, without people contesting the catches, he's catching everything. But I guess that's a good sign for him that at least he's catching all the passes in his direction, because last year was a disaster. And there is like the idea that a lot of it was probably mental. And at least for now, they're back here. I know it's not full contact. Like we said, it's basically passing camp, but he did look good. So I mentioned it before. I'm not going to take it away from him. It's better than looking crappy in this setting too. So,
yeah. Well, I had to laugh because it's not often you hear Pro Bowl season described as a disaster. But even he, when I asked him about his season, and he basically said, you know, there was a lot of like downs and stuff he wanted to throw up from it. But it's funny. I also laughed.
What was the number one thing he said? Balls that he was needed to work.
Yeah. On. Yeah. Balls, absolutely.
Balls.
I remember
that was an accident, obviously, right?
Right. I remember being on your pod last summer, I think it was in training camp, and you had him down for like 1500 yards. So I also laugh at that because he definitely, he gets you every year. So you always got to have to be a little cautious with the offseason optimism because it hasn't fully translated to the fall.
Yeah, it'll, be inter- it'll be interesting because I always say I'm going to die on the Evan Engram hill. Like I'm leading the bus. Like I'm in 1 year, I'm finally going to be right because there's just too much talent there. But now it's like, I want to still say, okay, I should do that. I should still, you know, be on the leader of the Evan Engram bandwagon. But now they have so many targets. Like literally, what's his ceiling?
Right.
Like what? Like is 1,200 yards even possible for Evan Engram in this offense? Even if he blows up and has a great year, like is that realistic?
No, I mean I'd be very surprised. I was looking at something. I think he had, you know, over 100 targets last year. Well, you just brought in Kenny Golladay. I think a lion's share of those targets would probably go that way. Or if someone's going to have 140 targets on this offense, you're more likely to be Golladay than Engram. So yeah, I think, but that's why
Kadarius Toney. I mean, we didn't even get to him yet, but they, you know, they drafted a receiver in the first round too.
Yeah, and Kyle Rudolph will probably have a bigger share than, you know, Caden Smith and these guys. So no, I think, but that might be the best thing for him because I mean, I think he was a little overexposed as sort of a number one option last year. I don't think that's a great fit. But if he could just
know, isn't it? I mean,
what's that?
It was by attrition. They didn't have anybody
right
to do it with.
So no, I think him as your third or fourth or fifth best option is probably best for all involved. You know, a little less targets might be a good thing, and just, you know, a couple big plays a game, and that's probably what he's best suited for.
We're taping this on a Thursday, and Kadarius Toney was not there. He was excused to deal with a family emergency. So now that is, I mean, five practices we've been there for. He has completed one. But that one yesterday, he did look pretty good. I was impressed, at least. I mean, just the way he moves, you could see, okay, this is why the guy was a first-round pick, right? I mean, he moves differently than a lot of other guys on the field. Your impressions of what you've seen from Kadarius Toney throughout, I guess, rookie minicamp in the beginning, really the first 2 days here at minicamp?
Man, I feel like we could do a whole podcast because it's been an adventure. And like you said, we're only five practices in. Wednesday's practice was great because it was, you know, relatively uneventful. I mean, he did look good, but I think the more important part is he started, participated, and finished practice, you know, without any issues, which has been few and far between. And listen, today is different. We don't know, family emergency, that could mean anything. And certainly, you know, that could happen to anybody at any time. But so throwing that out, it just feels like there's kind of been something with him every day. Again, it's a small sample size, but also you have to keep in mind, this isn't a guy who came in with, you know, no question marks. So you would have loved to see just a nice quiet spring where he shows up, puts in the work, and it's, you know, nobody has any, you know, questions. I mean, I've never heard of a rookie, you know, I've been on the beat 5 years, skipping the offseason voluntary program, and, you know, might happen, I don't know, around the league. I can't think of any. I know Bosa held out a couple of years ago. That was pretty unique, but it's pretty rare. I mean,
that was for mini camp. I don't think I remember looking that up. I don't think that was for OTAs, Bosa.
Okay. So was, I mean,
I found that to be unique. I didn't find any other examples.
Okay. So yeah. So I mean, you did more of the homework than I did, but it was just strange. I mean, especially because he was at rookie mini camp. So I mean, a lot of people getting tied up with the contract, and I think you and I were talking about that is sort of what the word kind of is, that it was contract related, but it's just strange then because you have to sign a waiver to participate in the rookie minicamp, and that would cover him through the OTA. So if he blew out his knee, he would still be protected. So just, you know, it's just been a kind of a strange start. And if it had been Aziz Ojulari or Ellerson Smith, these guys that have, you know, had no question marks, you know, in the character department and the draft process, you would say, oh, wow, that's really odd. But with Toney, there was just a lot of stuff there. And I'm not getting into like the gun stuff. So I know people say, you know, nothing was illegal there. I'm not saying that. It's just like, we've been around long enough. There's just stuff, for lack of a better term, seem to find certain guys, you know, 89 guys cleats fit right. And one guy's doesn't, you know, 89 guys can finish practice and do conditioning. One guy can't. When it's always the same guy, you just start to say like, there's just always something. And again, we're very early. And, you know, you mentioned his talent and the way he moves. I mean, listen, I'm certainly not going to bury the guy because he'll make you look real bad in week one when, you know, he takes a bubble screen and breaks three tackles and goes 60 yards for a touchdown. So the talent is there. And I think that it's just really important for him to manage him, stay on top of him. I just don't think he's going to be a low maintenance guy. I mean, I think that we've seen already. There was a lot of those questions coming out. You know, I have one thing that someone pointed out to me that made me scratch my head too. When you think about it, he obviously didn't become physically gifted a senior at Florida. He's been probably the most dynamic player every field he's ever stepped on. And yet he didn't really even have a role until his senior year. So clearly 3 years for them to figure things out at Florida. You know, no coach would choose to keep a guy that athletic on the bench unless there was other stuff to manage. So listen, you know, we've seen plenty of wide receivers in this league have drama, have different issues, and the talent overcomes it. We'll see. It's very early, but you would just, I think Joe Judge, Dave Gettleman, everyone would prefer a quieter spring than what they got.
He's building a nice little resume, interesting resume. I don't think it's problematic or anything you need to worry about, but it's definitely an interesting resume. Remember, these, like you said, things seem to find guys. I've covered hundreds of players, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of players. Only one seemed to manage to have a fake fiance that they needed to denounce publicly, you know? And those kind of things just find certain people. It somehow happens to certain people. And, let's just hope that we're not dealing with that with Kadarius Toney here moving forward. But I was impressed with him on the field on Wednesday, at least. Just the way he's able to get in and out of cuts, to me, is different than, you know, C.J. Border. You know, Sterling Shepard's pretty good at that, too. But, like, he's in a rarefied air of guys on this practice field that we saw in regards to the way he's able to move and accelerate.
No, I mean, he's a freak, and you don't even have to watch practice. Yeah, everyone's seen his highlight clips. I mean, he does stuff where you just don't even understand how he, you know, broke through a pack or how he spun off a tackle. Or, I mean, the way his just like joints and ligaments move is like odd. It's strange. Like, you don't see too many humans who can do that. So,
yeah, the way he stops. That straight leg stop. It's definitely.
It's crazy. Yeah. So, no, I mean, listen, there's a lot there to work with. And I think Tyke Tolbert and the support staff and all those guys are going to certainly, you know, it's going to be their full-time job to just manage everything from Monday to Saturday to make sure he's out there on Sunday. Because certainly when the ball's in his hands, when the lights are on, I'm sure he's going to make some, you know, tremendous plays this year.
Well, that's one thing you got to say Joe Judge has done well since he's got here with. He's gotten that buy-in from players that you want and been able to sort of quiet when there's these little bubble ups, right? Golden Tate, for example, last year. And that's a situation where normally I would have thought that would have blown up and Golden Tate wouldn't have been on the roster by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to manage to, you know, keep that under wraps, get everybody back on board and make it work. So, and that's something I noticed. Tell me what you think about this. I mean, when you hear the guys talk this week, last week, all throughout this offseason, seems to still be a complete buy-in of what Joe Judge is selling with his program.
Absolutely. No, I think that's probably his biggest strength to this point. Because, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, they went 6-10 last year. But again, we've been around losing teams and there's different feels. You know, I think what Shermer went 5-11 in his first year, I didn't come out of that year saying, wow, they're really building something and heading in the right direction. You know,
the Giants did, though.
Yeah, most points in the division. Who can forget? But no, it just definitely feels different. And they obviously added talent. So listen, it'll be different this year. There's going to be some expectations. They start 1-7 again. Nobody's going to be cheering if they, you know, go on a run in the second half. They need to win. And they really kind of upped the ante because I was thinking it was going to be a sort of a slow build. Judge is really going to build his culture and really take their time. And they kind of accelerated that timeline, in my opinion. When you spend the way they did, the expectations are going to come with it. So let's see if he goes 7-10 this year. It's still weird to say the records like that. A lot of the air will come out of that balloon. But I don't think, you know, we're expecting that because I it's not just him as a leader. I mean, you hear Blake Martinez always. Makes good points. He was on like Good Morning Football this week where he talks about how Judge like takes you from stretching to individual to 7-on-7. And like, he's able to identify why you made a mistake, like in the game or in that practice based on, you know, these small little things. Like, he really is a very like a, you know, football savant. Like, he really understands the game and is able to communicate it. You know, a good example of his leadership was today. He was talking about how when they drafted Toney, he reached out to Sterling Shepard, kind of explain the situation. Like, we're not taking this guy to take, you know, your spot as a slot receiver. He said he did something similar with Nate Solder when they drafted Andrew Thomas. All you have to do is look to Green Bay to see how far a phone call like that might go.
Yeah.
And of course, it doesn't mean that like in a year, they might still cut Sterling Shepard for cap reasons and Tony's a, you know, stud, but just making that phone call and just the communication, the steps he makes, you know, I think it's obviously pretty clear now that the picture that was painted of him last August as like this tyrant who's making everybody run and this and that. Was off base. I mean, he's definitely a hard driving coach and demands a lot from players, but he does a good job of balancing that out. And I think that's why, to use your word, they have that buy-in. And to kind of bring it back to Toney, I think he also probably feels like he's built this culture. He has a really good locker room. He has a good pulse on how things are. You can afford to take a risk a little bit. You know, you don't need 53 choir boys. You can have a guy who, you know, you got to stay on top of, but has a ton of talent, and you have faith in your locker room and your style of leadership, that you can keep him on the right track and then obviously get the results.
Yeah. You know, Joe Judge feels that way. Like, he's like, give me talent. I'll deal with them as a person. Like, I could deal with that. Let me take care of that. Right. And as you brought up, the easy, lazy narrative with Joe Judge is, oh, he's Bill Belichick. He's not going to say anything. He's got no personality. He's going to run like a military type ship. But I mean, his interpersonal skills is, I think, probably, and like you said, that's probably his best quality. So, and you don't, that's not what you see with Bill Belichick, far from it. Right. But Bill Belichick, he has a different way of doing it, because he's got, you know, two handful of rings that he just holds up in the air and says, hey, look, guys, look at me, do whatever I say. And you'll get these. And that's basically how he operates. And that's all he's got to do. So it's a little different. I think Judge knows he's not in that situation. He doesn't have the clout of his two successors, Belichick and Saban. So his way to compensate for it is, okay, I have to be able to communicate with these guys and relate to them and work with them in that way. So it's working so far. So the offensive line. Now, we can't sit here and make any judgment at all on offensive line play during these OTAs and minicamps, right? But I think what we have learned and what we have seen, and it is really clear, and we kind of knew this for months, even before, during free agency, when the Giants didn't make any moves at tackle, really go after any tackle, to be quite honest with you. The idea is that they want Matt Parrott to be the starter at right tackle. Andrew Thomas at left tackle, Matt Parrott at right tackle. And then when they brought back Nate Solder, he's the swing guy, kind of. And if Matt Parrott doesn't play well, doesn't live up to the expectations that they have for him, then maybe Solder ends up starting at right tackle. But it's pretty clear, Dan, they want Matt Parrott to win that job.
Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't, you know, again,
I know that's not a question. I know that wasn't a question.
Talk about. But it's not even a competition, really. I mean, Matt Parrott, as far as, you know, I could tell, he took pretty much every first team rep at right tackle. I mean, actually, Solder probably got more at left tackle, because it just seemed like, you know, Andrew Thomas maybe on a little bit of a pitch count just coming back from the ankle surgery. Mm-hmm. And again, it's funny because, you know, you want to have competition, but if you want Parrott to be the starter, you need him to get as many reps as possible. So it's not really a thing where Judge can just have a meritocracy where, like, you get a, you know, series, Nate gets a series. Like, no, Matt has to get most of them. Doesn't work out, then obviously
he needs to work.
Yeah, exactly. You trust that Solder has a reservoir of experience, but you're not going to, like, alternate those guys all summer. You need Parrott to get all the work and then hope he just validates the faith they have in him. But yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty clear. I mean, the offensive line, I'd be shocked if it's not, you know, Andrew Thomas, Shane Lemieux, Nick Gates, Will Hernandez, Matt Parrott, left to right. I mean, maybe they, again, we don't know that.
Really,
the
door, young line, man. Woo.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe the door isn't totally closed on a veteran. I don't think they're going to, you know, bring somebody in. I think that's the line they're going to ride with. But, like, I don't think Zach Fulton is going to start. You know, I don't think Nate Solder is going to start. I think they're going to go with that young group, and they're kind of crossing their fingers and believing in these young guys developing, believing in their coach's ability to get these guys to develop, which, again, is another thing where Joe Judge doesn't lack for self-confidence. You know, he believes that, you know, he and his coaching staff can get the best out of. And it's a big gamble. There's no way to downplay that. It's a gamble, but, you know, they're certainly, you know, making an informed gamble. And, you know, they like these guys in the draft. They like what they saw from them as rookies. They really believe that they'll be good enough. A lot's riding on them being right in that belief.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with Andrew Thomas. Like, they cannot afford for Andrew Thomas not to be, forget play it to be like he did at the beginning of last year. If he does that, they're screwed. He not even play the way he finished last year, when he was like, okay, he was serviceable, like, average player. Like, they need him to develop into a good player. Like, right. He's not a good player. If he just sits at average or below average, like, they're screwed. I mean, because where are they getting a high-end player on the offensive line then? Maybe Nick Gates develops into one. Like you said, Matt Parrott, who knows? Shane Lemieux, okay. I mean, I think he could develop into a quality player. I don't think anyone's dreaming that Shane Lemieux is going to be this dominant guard, and Will Hernandez, we've kind of seen what Will Hernandez is already, right? So it's like, Andrew Thomas and Nick Gates, one of them better be a premium player. And really, you need it to be the guy who was the number four overall pick last year. So the defense, we'll talk about it real quick because it was a topic that was discussed a lot. And I think Pat Graham said it best, like, you have to play man-to-man in this league to be successful. Like, and they did last year, but they didn't do it a whole bunch. They kind of tried to hide and mask their weaknesses. But I think we got confirmation this week from speaking to Pat Graham, Adoree Jackson, James Bradberry, that this team is going to play a hell of a lot more man-to-man this year. I assume you're of the belief, Dan, as well, that they're a lot better positioned for that. And it's based on what you saw on the field and what we've seen this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell just by the way they attacked the offseason that, you know, they weren't going to run it back with, you know, Isaac Yiadom and Julian Love at corner. They knew that had to be a position where they're upgraded. You know, Adoree Jackson becomes available, and they certainly made the financial commitment to signal how much they valued that position. And honestly, I was saying before the draft, I wouldn't have been shocked if they kind of doubled down. But of course, Horn and Surtain were off the board, so it kind of took that out of the equation. But then in the third round, man, they traded up for Aaron Robinson. So they're not just saying, like, you know, the secondary was good enough last year. They want to have, you know, an elite lockdown secondary, so they can play a ton of man, especially because if you're going to look at this defense and say, what's the biggest question mark, the biggest weakness, you're going to say the edge rushers. Well, I think there's obviously that school of thought now where if you have a really good secondary that can cover, that can help, because then you can be more aggressive with blitzing and, you know, scheme the pass rush, which they did, you know, pretty well last year, even without a great secondary, which sort of just kind of hats off to Patrick Graham. But no, I think definitely expect to see a lot of man. And, you know, I think with Bradberry and Jackson, they really complement each other well. Even though I asked Bradberry about it today, and he said he thinks he can cover the small, fast guys and the big guys. But I think in an ideal world, you know, you kind of have Jackson to chase the Tyreek Hills of the world. And then Bradberry matches up with, you know, the Mike Evans of the world. And that's right. A nice compliment. And obviously they're kind of loaded at safety, and they'll have Robinson and Donnie Holmes, you know, being at the slot. I think Robinson is a guy, he didn't do much this spring. He's clearly been dealing with some sort of, you know, seemingly minor injury, but I think he has really going to push for that slot job. And you know, he's the guy's known for man. So no, that's clear priority. The biggest upset last year really was how little they played. And they wanted to play it a ton, but you saw right out of the gate in, you know, Pittsburgh, where guys were getting, you know, lost on rub routes left and right, that they adjusted and realized they just couldn't with the personnel they had. So they adjusted on the fly. But I think, you know, and Patrick Graham's DNA, going back to that, you know, Belichick style, they want to play a lot of man. So I would expect with the personnel they have now, you'll see a lot more of it this year.
Yeah. And you just brought up something with Aaron Robinson also spending most of his time on the sideline throughout most of, you know, mini camp and OTAs for what we've seen so far. It makes you think that not ideal for the Giants that their first and third round pick really didn't get on the field that much in the spring. Those are the guys that you want to get on the field as much as possible. You know, the young guys, yeah, the rookies, you want them to get that experience so that when the training camp comes, I think this is the biggest takeaway of what Joe Judge is trying to get out of it. He wants to go over everything in the spring, have them know what they're doing, so that then when the players come out here in the summer, they're able to play rather than just spending half the time learning and thinking.
Right. And I think it's going to be a much more physical training camp, because you think back last year, I was so abbreviated with the end of the spring, and it was like a ramp up program, this and that. I think he's going to come out and it's going to be, you know, pretty hot and heavy early in camp with a lot of physicality. So yeah, he doesn't want guys still trying to learn the playbook. And then you're going to have, you know, I think he basically confirmed today, they're going to have joint practice with Cleveland, joint practice in New England. I think it's going to be an even tougher camp than it was last year, because it'll be longer. And I think he's going to, you know, really tax these guys. So you don't want them to be still figuring out the playbook at that point. You want them to be ready to roll and really compete, you know, full speed. And, you know, that's where, yeah, certainly missing reps right now isn't great, but at least Robinson was there and he was doing the install stuff. He just didn't really do anything that was physically demanding. But yeah, I mean, that's what the spring is about. It's kind of just laying the groundwork. He wants to make sure guys are in shape, but also it's really about the, you know, getting everything down, the communication, the playbook, and so they can hit the ground running when camp opens up in a few weeks.
Which is an interesting concept if they go hard in camp, because really hard camp, because how do coaches factor in that 17th game? It'll be interesting. You know, the season could be longer now. The season will be longer now. It could go even longer than 17 games. You play three playoff games. You're talking about a 20-game season. I mean, you're getting deep now. So it'll be interesting to see if he goes in super hard, or at some point there he does try and take his foot off the pedal a little bit. But I don't know. We'll see how that goes, which kind of takes us into the last topic here. Then we'll play a little quick game on Saquon Barkley. We heard from Judge. He said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, it's not just about the short term. It's about the long term with Saquon Barkley as well. And Saquon kind of repeated the same thing. But I did find it interesting. And what do you think about this, Dan? They did not want to put a timetable on his return. They did not want to. Saquon provided literally zero details, despite me asking twice, about where he is in his progress. Is he running? Is he cutting? You know, what's he doing? Is he basically out there doing everything, you know, straight, full speed? Like, we didn't get any of that. What did you make of that and that sort of playing it close to the vest approach?
Well, I'll borrow from one of your other segments, you know, Jordan on the beat. Like, I'll take some people inside. Like, when you report something, like you had a report a week or two ago that, you know, they're going to be really cautious with Saquon and, you know, maybe not even be full speed until, you know, I don't know exactly what you said, but, you know, you basically put a message out that they're going to be cautious. So as a reporter, you put something out there, you trust your sources.
I don't know what you're talking about, Dan.
You put something out there, you know, you trust your sources, you know, you're not going to run it if you don't. But then, like, when the actual subjects step to the mic, you hope they don't contradict what you said, because even if you end up being right, it doesn't matter. You're going to get a barrage of tweets saying that, you know, fake news and you were wrong. So to kind of tie it back, I think you probably felt some encouragement from at least for validation for your story, because they certainly sounded a very cautious note. You know, there was nothing like Saquon be like, I'm going to be back, you know, day one of training camp. Like, no doubt I'll be there week one. Like, he didn't touch any sort of specific timeline. We asked him, you know, six different ways, and he, you know, he's pretty media savvy, and he knew exactly what people were trying to do and trying to get him to say, and he just wouldn't go there. And obviously Judge didn't either, but even just their general comments, they're really stressing, like, we're not going to force it, we're not going to push him, he's going to be back when he's physically ready. You know, you're talking longevity. They're not looking at this as like, we need Saquon week one, week two. They're looking at, we want Saquon to sign an extension and be, you know, the face of this franchise for another 5 years, whatever it may be. So they're certainly not going to do something risky with a guy they have already so much invested in. And clearly you hear from John Mara, they plan to make an even larger investment in. So they should take the long view. I'm sure a lot of people are saying, you know, screw it, run him into the ground and then replace him in a year or two. But that's just not how they're approaching this. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, the timeline is definitely totally undetermined, at least publicly. You know, it obviously, they don't know. You never know. It could be a setback. He could think could really, you know, go great for him, and he's ready before they expect. But I just think they're going to be super conservative and certainly not push him at all, you know, during at least the early stages of camp. And I guess we'll just kind of see how it develops.
Would you bet on him playing week one? Now someone says, okay, Dan, you got to bet your life. He plays week one, or he's not even ready by then.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, he suffered the injury in week two. So, I mean, he's got a long, long runway, you know, basically a year. Listen, I'm not an ACL expert, but you do see most guys are able to come back within a year. So listen, I don't know the intricacies of his,
and
I know
the surgery in October.
Yeah. And I know the meniscus kind of complicates factors a little bit, but put it this way, if he's not back and not physically ready in week one, like maybe they, you know, if they scale back his workload or something, that's one thing, but if he like just is inactive and can't play in week one, I'd be a little surprised. I mean, I think that would be, you know, unless they're just being super, super conservative, he's not physically ready by week one. I would think that would raise a little bit of alarm, just in the sense that, again, you're basically talking 11 months after the surgery, you would think, just based on, you know, the track record of other guys, he'd be ready to play. But again, maybe they're just gonna be so conservative that they're not gonna push him, but they're obviously a long way to go to make that determination.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, my gut just tells me it'll be like almost 11 months. Like I said, October to like September, that in the end, they might not say it until like the day before, but he'll be ready to play week one. That's just my gut. Like, from what I hear, Saquon's doing well in his rehab. Somebody told me they saw him running and jump cutting recently. So we're like jump cutting at this point. And now what month are we in? We're in June, right?
Right.
So we got another 3 months to get him ready for the season. Basically, that's a decent amount of time if he's already fully running full speed and cutting and doing that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, there's a line between being conservative and just being kind of unnecessarily cautious. I mean, at some point he has to play and get hit and cut and all that stuff. So, I mean, if the doctors clear him and he's ready to go, I mean, I don't think you hold him out just to be extra cautious. That kind of pointless. You know, it's professional sports. You got to play. So,
yeah. Well, the interesting part will be, how do you bring him back? Like, what do you do? Like, when do you put him into full speed practices? Do you get him any contact? Do you put him in any sort of contact before he gets into a regular season game? It's an interesting position. First of all, running backs don't even get tackled for real in training camp. So how do you kind of fit him in to make sure he gets enough work and he's ready? I mean, I'm curious to see how they do that this summer.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's with Judge, and not like we have any track record to know how he's going to handle this type of thing. And Saquon's a little bit of a unique case because he is kind of such an important part of the franchise that, you know, I don't know, Corey Clement or someone, you got to go out there and practice to make the team. You know what I mean? Saquon, it's a little different.
Get out there, bud.
Yeah. So it'll be fascinating. I'll be stay tuned at ESPN.com to get into the latest updates, and I'm sure it'll be tracking it closely.
Well, you know, you brought up a funny thing because, they did kind of back up everything that my story was suggesting. But Saquon, it hasn't always been that way with Saquon. I'll give it Jordan on a beat later of how there was a situation where it went the complete other direction. I reported something about Saquon a couple of years back, and then he went out publicly and completely contradicted everything that I said. So I'll get to that in a little bit. But first, let's play a little game, right? Let's do the over-under game here, okay? Mm-hmm. A little off the grid one. So not one of these aren't easy ones. We know Joe Judge, his propensity for expletives. He slipped a couple into press conferences last year accidentally. Joe Judge F-bombs in press conferences this year. Over under 1.5. Can he stay under?
Ooh, I think he had two last year.
He had two, but he's a veteran now.
And it took him a while. It took longer than I expected, but I still remember his great line where he said, just churched that quote up for him a little bit. I don't know. We'll be in person, hopefully, probably. So that might, I think I'm going to take the over because it's maybe a little easier in Zoom where he's looking at a screen to not get as fired up. But I'm going to take the over. I think, yeah, you know, the in person.
We could poke him now in person if it's going to be in person, you know?
You'll be the one to push him over the edge if he's sitting at one in like December. I think you can do it to get him over the edge.
When you like triple up on like the same question.
Exactly. Yes.
In a different form. You can't, that's the Zoom thing. You can't do that with the Zoom. The follow up is like basically dead. I try and slip as many as I can in like one every time. But I mean, I have like four more waiting to go. And you can't get it in the Zoom atmosphere. It's a real killer. We've got Kelvin Benjamin still on the roster. August 12th, over or under?
Is August 12th like the very first cut?
2 days before the first preseason game. So basically asking, does he make it to the first preseason game?
Oh boy. I mean, from what I've seen, if you got to make room for somebody here, if they do sign a veteran guard or whatever, I mean, he'd be an easy guy to cut ties with. But I think he makes it that far. I don't think he's going to make the 53-man roster by any stretch, but yeah, I'll be optimistic on Kelvin's chances till he survive the first 2 weeks of camp. I mean, he's a guy who also wouldn't shock me if there's like a hamstring injury in the first week of camp. And so he's kind of on the roster and on, you know, on the sideline or something like that. Nothing about what I saw from him suggests like, oh wow, they got a guy who was a former first round pick and still looks the part. My theory is guys who have been out of the league for 2 years or over 30 and are trying a new position, that's probably, I'm going to err on the side of that probably not going well.
Oh, look at that. Dan Duggan invented that himself.
Very never fails.
Very impressive. All right. We got Danny Shelton. Okay. listed here at 6'2", 345. If I gave you the over on that, that would
over.
Be a, that would over. Be a joke. So that's not, I'm not even giving you that option. Danny Shelton, right now, today, 370 pounds, over, under. And I'm telling you, I have never, he makes snacks look thin. Like that, he that's how big Danny Shelton looks on the field. Over, under 370 pounds. Which way are you going, Dan Duggan?
Yeah, I was going to say, because you gave me 345. That's
a run layup.
To Vegas. Yeah. I mean, no, he is a just an enormous human being. Like, and again, we've covered the NFL. There's a lot of enormous human beings on the field, and he still stands out. I mean, you're taking attendance, and you're kind of going down the line. Like, you never miss 75. He is a big, big human. I mean, I guess whatever number you said, I'd probably take the over just because I can't get over how big he is. So, I mean, if you're saying 370, I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I'll take the over. Because
Dan's going with 371.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Price is right. I mean, I got to say over just because, I mean, he's just so huge that to say under just would go against everything my eyes have seen.
Saquon's first practice, August 24th. That is after the second preseason game. And now before the third preseason game. But remember, again, we don't know how this is going to work. There's only three preseason games. So which is the serious preseason game now? I don't know. We'll have to – that'll be an interesting topic this summer of how coaches approach that as well. So August 24th, first full practice for Saquon Barkley.
Oof. And then the other complicating factor is they're going to have so many joint practices. I don't know if that's the environment you want to bring him back in when, you can trust that, like, Blake Martinez isn't going to take a shot at him, but can you, feel the same way with some linebacker you don't know from Cleveland or New England? Man.
I guess that's the week. Is their third game, their third preseason game is against New England, right?
Right.
So I guess that would be the week that they joint practice in New England.
Right.
Which would make it tough to bring him back that week. But when do you bring him back then? Like,
yeah,
when is the right time?
Yeah, I mean, because you're talking full practice, too. I mean, like, if you wanted to play in week one, I mean, he has to at least, I think there's that week after that preseason game, or I guess, week one, technically, he'd have to be going full speed at that point. He's going to play in the opener. So I don't know about full practice. I think that, maybe even earlier, he'll be out there, going through some stuff. But I don't know that he ever really full practices until after the preseason schedule is over. Because again, I just don't know if you even want to expose him to a hit from an enemy line, behind enemy lines or something like that, where you can't totally control it. I'm sure, Judge would make it explicit to, he's in this relationship with Stefanski and Belichick that, no one's to touch him. But I don't know if you'd expose him in that setting. So I guess I'll have to say over that. Like a full practice. I think he'll be participating by then to some extent, but I don't think he's going to be, going, 2 hour practice, 11 on 11, be out there as much as, a starting running back typically would be.
Right. My thought is I picked that date because I thought maybe the second he would come back the week before. And then when they go to the joint practice for that, because the week before, I think it's like, that's not the Cleveland week. I think the Cleveland week's the first is earlier. I don't know. They could bring him back 1 week, then give him like a light week the next week after that, and then they get into the preseason. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. There's really no past precedent for this because this is a totally new setup of training camp with three preseason games, with two joint practices, and with the star running back coming back from injury. Like you said before, it's pretty unique. Last one, Jason Garrett. For somehow, some way, Jason Garrett talks, he does his press conferences, inspires zero confidence, refuses to take the bait on anything. You would think he almost doesn't understand the whole concept behind the media thing, which is really mind-boggling considering he's been in the league forever as a player, then as an assistant, and then as a coach, a head coach for the Dallas Cowboys, like the biggest team media-wise or attention-wise in the NFL. And like, you try and open the door for him and to say, hey, Jason, you're going to open the playbook in so many words this year. Now that you have all these weapons and he just doesn't want to take the bait. And then he runs out of time after like three questions. It's like a 4 minute interview. So Jason Garrett, next press conference, 4.5 minutes. Are you taking the over or the under? He lasted, I think it was five questions this week. He got five questions.
I guess I'll take the over because he does have a way of sort of filibustering. So even if you're going to only have a handful of questions, he does have the head for not answering the question at all, but using a lot of words. so I feel like they're up against
the which is practice. A skill. It's good skill.
Oh, it's absolutely masterful. I mean, Belichick puts on the clinic with that. You know, people talk about how he doesn't, you know, talk. They're kind of seeing the post game stuff where he's grunting out answers, but like you get him on like a Friday morning, he'll talk for 8 minutes on the history of long snapping. But no, Garrett, definitely long winded, but not too much meat in those answers. I thought he actually said a little bit more this week only because he identified something specific where he said, you know, the goal last year was to like cut back on turnovers. We didn't do that in the first half. We got better at it. Like, it wasn't groundbreaking, but it was actually a little more than he reveals where he specified something and shed a little insight. But definitely, I mean, especially it's tough for him because he follows Thomas McGahee and Patrick Graham on the coordinator's days. And both of those guys are really good press conferences too. So it makes the Garrett interviews just seem a little more dull. But I'll give him over.
There's nothing. It doesn't matter who he followed or who he came after. His interviews are dull.
Fair. Right,
go watch that thing. Anybody who's out there listening to this, you don't know what we're talking about. Go on the Giants website, watch Jason Garrett's press conference, and try not to fall asleep. Okay.
he's very polite, though. I'll give him that. I'll take the over on that.
I'd rather combative. You know what's funny you say about Patrick Graham? It's like, remember when Pat, I don't know how long you were here when Patrick Graham was in.
Yeah, for sure.
He was like nervous, like in front. He was very short. He wasn't like gregarious and outgoing. Now he like cracks jokes left and right. I mean, he's just like a different guy. It's great.
No, I remember it distinctly. He was terrible. He was like one of these position coaches they had to like, you know, pull out to talk to us like against his will. And then it was funny, it was towards the end where McAdoo already gotten fired. It was like his last press conference, and he turned it into like an open mic night. And I was like, well, where has this guy been the last 2 years? And certainly he's come back and he's a lot more comfortable in his own skin. And he's very entertaining. He's insightful. He's kind of humorous. And it's just nice to have a guy who, you know, you don't really know. You put this way, you don't know the answer when you ask him a question. But there's plenty of coaches where, you know, no matter what you ask, you're going to get just sort of the pablum that doesn't really reveal anything. But with Graham, you kind of don't know what he's going to say. It's a pretty interesting guy to talk to.
Yeah, he is. I do enjoy talking to Packer. Hopefully we get to talking to him in person too soon. So, but Dan, we appreciate it. Thank you for the time. You know, go make sure that little guy's still sleeping. And if not, you could grab a nap. You know, I mean, two kids, if you could grab a nap in the middle of the afternoon, huge win. Huge win.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I guess I owed you this podcast because Jordan, you donated like two bags of hand-me-downs from your son, which came in very handy. So I owed you one. So appreciate that.
We got a lot of kicks coming up on the way too. A lot of like, you know, cool pairs of sneakers that I find myself buying way too many of lately. So you're in good shape. What's his name again?
Jack.
Jack's going to have a sweet outfit. He's got some velour, jumpsuits too. It's gonna be sick.
I'm sure I've totally lost all your listeners at this point. So as a loyal listener, let me close the segment. On to the next one.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right. So Dugan, as my daughter likes to say, brought up a good point there. An interesting point. Because he said, you know, I wrote this story about Saquon a couple weeks ago, about how the Giants are going to bring him along slowly. And then Saquon went out there. Joe Judge went out there. And it kind of backed up what I was saying and reporting at the time. But it doesn't always work that way. Well, let me set the stage for this one. Saquon Barkley has that high ankle sprain. Everyone's talking about, this is like 2 or 3 weeks after he gets this high ankle sprain. Everyone's talking about how he's a miracle healer at the time. He's going to come back and he's going to end up playing against on this Thursday night game
against the New England Patriots. This is 2 years ago. And I report a few days before the game. I think like probably like Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it was. Tuesday, it must have been Tuesday morning because Wednesday they travel and then Thursday they play. So Tuesday morning I must report, you know, Saquon's not going to play. He's going to miss another game. And then Saquon later that day goes out there and he's standing in front of his locker doing a press conference saying, yeah, someone asked him, yeah, there's a report you're not going to play, blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, hey, I don't know anything about that. That's not true, blah, 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 this and that. And I'm sitting there, you know, taking it on the chin at the time, saying, okay, this makes me look stupid. But knowing, because I got it from someone solid, like solid, that he wasn't going to play that week. I got it from two people, actually. I got it from someone and then confirmed it from someone within the organization at the time. That no, he was not going to play that week. So I felt 100 on it. But then he goes out there publicly and he like poo-poos it. And I'm sitting there looking like an idiot. Now, in the end, I knew I'd be fine. And then I even had some media people giving me crap, like not here, national people saying, hey, you know, you better be careful on this one. I don't know. And I'm thinking to myself, no, I know. Well, they're all giving me crap anyway. But for the 24 hours or so until Saquon was ruled out, I had to sit there and look like an idiot. Knowing, though, that I was going to be right. Still get nervous. You still get nervous. I mean, it's just like when you break a story. You get nervous when you break a story, even though you know it's true. Just until you, like, get another validation or confirmation that you're right. That's just maybe it's just the adrenaline. Maybe it's just the way it goes. But that's, for me at least, that's how it works. Like, I'll break a story, even a signing. And then it's like this feeling of satisfaction that you accomplished something and you broke the story. But then you sit there and you're a little nervous. Like, what if this person lied to me? Even though you know that person didn't lie to you. What if multiple people lied to me? Like, and you know these multiple people didn't lie to you. But these things still go through my head every single time. Every single time. That's the way it works. So that's my Jordan on the beat for this week's Breaking Big Blue. This is the portion of the podcast where I tell you what it's like to cover the Giants, cover the NFL, work for ESPN. I forgot after the Chris Snee episode last week, I should have added this as the Jordan on the beat. So I'll give you a real abridged version of this story. But you know, the reality is it's Chris Snee's fault that Eric Flowers attacked me. At least that was the word at the time, is that I used to do these videos with Chris Snee and we used to break down some stuff with the Giants. And at one point when Flowers was a rookie, he kind of was breaking down his play, said he wasn't even that bad, but he said he needed to work on a couple things. So it could have been taken as critical. But apparently, Flowers never would admit this to me or admit why he attacked me in the first place because I didn't ask a question. But it did get back to me through somebody else that he was mad about something Chris Snee said in one of those videos. So I blame Chris Snee for Eric Flowers coming after me. Should have added that last week's episode. So cleaned it up here. I'm Jordan Ron, and remember, like, subscribe, tell your friends. The best Giants inside information podcast there is Breaking Big Blue. Hands down, nobody else is close. I promise you. You're not going to get this information like that you got from me and Dan Duggan today anywhere else. A lot of those other podcasts, they bring different value, but not this kind of value. So make sure you tell your friends Breaking Big Blue, and you know you could reach me everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, email, don't call my phone, but everywhere else you could reach out to me. I do my best to get back to as many of you as possible. I really do, especially not on Twitter, especially aside from Twitter, I should say, because Twitter, it's a little crazy on there. It's like the wild, wild west on Twitter, the dregs of the universe, I like to say. So, but everywhere else, I really do. I do my best to get back to you, answer everybody's questions. They have to be within reason, but you get the point. Anyway, that's it for this episode of Breaking Big Blue. I'm your host, Jordan Ronan. See you next time.